Coming up after this short break is Jovan Svetkoski, financial planner at Knight Financial Services. And of course, if you've got any questions or queries that you'd like to talk about with Jovan on air, please ring the studio right now on 9484 1927 and register your interest. Back with Jovan just after this break. Curtain Radio. Time now is 20 minutes past one. Thank you so much for your company. This is the Tuesday edition of the Afternoon Show here on Curtain Radio 100.1 FM. Now, the Afternoon Show has regular contributors that share their knowledge and expertise with us on a vast array of subjects. And my next special guest is a financial planning expert and director of Knight Financial Services, Jovan Svetkoski. I must point out that the advice suggested by Jovan is general in nature, and it is always advisable to seek professional advice. As I mentioned just before the break, if you have any questions or if you're seeking advice from Jovan, call the Curtain Radio studio now on 9484 1927 or email your query to studio at curtainfm.com.au. Welcome, Jovan. It's great to see you again, and thanks for being here as always. And as you always do, you come in with an incredible subject matter. And what's today's subject about? Tell our listeners.
It's about downsizing, and to the point that Australians are actually quite reluctant to downsize the family home.
Well, that seems to be something that we need to talk about, because at the moment everybody's expecting to improve on the housing problem, and they're being encouraged to downsize or at least sell, so at least it'll give an opportunity for another person that wants to get into the home market.
Yeah, look, they are, but all the research shows, so I looked at some research from AMP, from Australian Super, and from the Productivity Commission, and they all basically agree that about four out of every five Australians in the age bracket where they may downsize are quite reluctant. And that's despite, you know, some generous rules about getting money into super if you sell the family home.
So why do you think that is? Do you think it's because they haven't got the confidence in the fact that we've just heard recently that there may be a tax put on superannuation, or a death tax, and a widow's tax, and all these different taxes? And really, the superannuation for most Australians seems to be a huge question mark about its potential or its potency in the future.
Yeah, look, potentially in the long future, but people who are sort of 55, 60, 65, 70 looking to downsize, a lot of them already have access. The impetus to downsize, or the reluctance, let's say, it's really about other factors. Look, stamp duty is a recurring complaint. You know, you downsize, you've got to pay stamp duty on your next home.
Yep.
You know, if you buy $1 million house, it's 50 grand, right?
True.
So there's some friction costs. One of the other big ones at the moment in the Perth market is finding a suitable home to downsize in. I mean, look, this is a critical issue.
That's an understatement.
It's an understatement. I had a look. There's 6,509 houses, 6,509 properties for sale in Perth right now. It's not a lot.
6,000?
6,509.
Yeah, it's not much.
Yeah, it's gone and it's gone up.
And how many people are looking is probably the more pertinent question.
Yeah, that's right. So it is difficult. And look, there's other factors, emotional factors. You know, kids have grown up in those houses. It can be a meeting point.
They don't want to be in a retirement village. They prefer to be in an independent house, not have to worry about strata issues if they're going to downsize to something like a unit, for example. People are very discouraged by some of the strata rules.
Yeah, so and absolutely. And look, to your point, with retirement villages, I did not know this, but the occupancy sits at around 96% Australia-wide. So there's not even a lot of those to go around.
Yeah.
And look, the other aspect, which is probably not spoken about too much, is that the family home as an asset is shielded from Centrelink's asset test. So if you do sell it and downsize and have money left over, your Centrelink is going to go down.
Definitely a disincentive.
Definitely.
So how do the downsizer contributions work?
Look, you just have to be over 55 years old at the time you make a contribution, and it's got to come from a house that was your main residence for a period of 10 continuous years. It doesn't mean you need to live in it now. So if you've lived in your first home for 15 years and then upsized, and that first home is now an investment property, guess what? It still counts. You can make a downsizer contribution
from it.
That's a bonus. Yeah, so, and each member of a couple can put up to $300,000 into super within 90 days of the change of legal ownership. And the cool part about this is you don't both have to be on the title. It can just be one person on the title of that house. But if you're a member of a couple, you can both make the contribution.
That's interesting. Because yep. most people that got unit trusts in place, most of them only have one of the owners of the business on the actual title of the house.
Hmm. Yep, that can be right. So sometimes in professional services, lawyers are a big example, actually, where they may be at risk of being sued. They often have the family home in only one spouse's
name.
That's
correct.
Yeah, yep.
Well, any indemnity regarding the business
that's right.
doesn't affect your place of residence, that is.
Yep. And look, the downsizer contribution also does not count towards something we call the total super balance cap, which is at about 2.1.
I've never heard of that before, Yvonne. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, look, it's these days there's a cap of how much you can get into super. So as you're nearing 2.1 million, there's limits on what you can get in. So if someone had $2.3 million in super today, you could not get any money in, using a after-tax contribution.
Right.
But a downsizer contribution does not count. You can put it in.
Do you actually need to genuinely downsize? That's probably the big question, isn't it?
No, and that's where, this is, I think, a point of confusion as well, Jamie, to be honest. Everyone hears the word downsize and they think that you have to buy a smaller house, a cheaper house. You don't even need to buy a house at all. You can just sell the place and put the money into super.
Okay.
Mm, so you don't actually have to buy another house. You can sell it and buy a holiday home and put the residual proceeds into super. It doesn't matter.
So what are the... hang on, I've lost my track here. So what are the actual costs?
Oh, look, yeah, there's a lot of factors to think about. So you have to look at the actual costs of downsizing.
Right.
And look, it can be expensive at times. Your home might need repairs, renovations, a fresh coat of paint.
Yeah.
You've got to look at the fees involved in selling, advertising, agent fees.
Yeah.
Make sure you understand the costs of buying your new house, the stamp duty being a big one.
Including the cost of the real estate agent.
That's right.
The commission.
That's right. Yeah. People can forget about that. So, and look, there might be some short-term costs depending on the timing of when you get into your new house, like renting or storage fees for your furniture. So it's not necessarily an easy process.
Mm. And in case, you know, especially with people that have been there in excess of 20 years, there'd be a lot of moving going on, I can tell you. So what is the market doing?
Yep. So look, that's another disincentive at the moment. Locally, the Perth market is, you know, probably the strongest it's been for 25 years. So it's important to have a realistic idea about what your property is actually worth. A professional valuation is something I'd recommend, understanding what it's really worth and then looking at where you're going to go to.
Yeah, the location is important.
And what that costs.
Okay. So talk about location then. What's some of the requirements for when it comes to location? What benefits the actual person's settling and downsizing?
Yeah, so you might... This is where it gets, again, a little bit difficult, because often when someone downsizes, downsizing to the area they already live in may not actually be possible. So that means they're going away from friends and family or their existing support networks. So if that's going to be the case when you downsize, you want to make sure that there's a local community there that you can get to know. Maybe you're closer to health services or recreational activities that you like to do. That way you don't downsize and find yourself isolated.
What are the benefits, mate?
Yep. Oh, look, this is one of the biggest factors. You move into a smaller place. The biggest benefit is you pocket a bunch of money that you can then use to, I guess, upgrade your lifestyle. For example, if you use the full downsize contribution, say you've got a $2 million home, you spend $1.4 to downsize all in after agents, fees and costs, you've got $600,000 extra. I mean, you could look at that and just say, well, I'm going to spend $60,000 a year for the next 10 years on a business class holiday. And then 10 years later, you're in the same position as you were today. So it can have a lot of benefits from a lifestyle point of view. So you just want to make sure that you're going to be better off financially if that's your main motivation for selling.
What other factors do people need to consider?
We touched on this. So Centrelink's a big one. You might sell your house and then you lose don't get any age pension.
Yeah.
You might lose your pension card. It doesn't mean it goes away forever. The age pension is always there. It's means tested.
Yep.
But you have to understand if your entitlements are going to be fully lost or just reduced. So that's something you need to understand. And it may also decrease, or you might lose your Commonwealth Seniors Healthcare card too, depending on how much assets you've got. That one is less of a concern, Jamie.
Well, not
days.
Really. If you've got ailments, I think it could be quite crucial to, yep. to your existence. So.
I mean less of a concern because the limits have gone up so much.
Okay.
So, you know, the last time I spoke about this, the limits were 53,000. There's an income limit. It was 53,000 for a single person. It's now 100.
Yeah.
And the limit for a couple was 86,000. It's now nearly 170. So the income test limits on the Commonwealth Seniors Healthcare Card have gone up a lot in the last 2 or 3 years. So, you know, separate to that, there's probably a lot of people out there listening who weren't eligible 5 years ago and probably are now, but don't know they are. So that's a separate topic. Maybe we can talk about that one next week.
And maybe if there's people out there listening right now that want to have some information discussed regarding the fact of downsizing and the potential of benefits or negatives from it, you're more than welcome to call right now, 948-49027. Thank you for giving us that that rundown, especially about that sort of stuff. Before I go any further, there's a few things happening that I thought were quite interesting when it comes to superannuation. As you know, in my world, which is the music world, with sporting people, with the technicians involved with music industry and so forth, superannuation has now become an obligation for most employers to perform. But when it comes to small businesses, a lot of the businesses are really suffering from the pressure of actually administrating the superannuation as well as all the other business factors they have to deal with. And really, the government's trying to give it some sort of incentive. But really, the actual work that's required to actually maintain that level of administration is too much of a cost to bear for the sort of the small business tradesmen or small businesses.
Yeah, look, being super stream ready is what I think you're alluding to, and then payday super, which is the new rules. You've got to sort of pay it
weekly,
basically within a week.
Previous to that, it was quarterly, a bit like the BAS statements.
Right. Yep. And the reason the government brought that in was a lot of employers weren't paying it. I always think the solution to all of this is to have the RBA have a low-cost super solution that they run and invest in terms of, or some kind of solution that, you know, businesses can tap into that's really easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you can get employed by someone and they just go, well, here's a super fund.
Yeah.
It's the Reserve Bank of Australia operated super fund.
Would that create a bit more safety and a bit more stability when it comes to superannuation?
I don't know about that, but it just creates more competition.
Yeah.
You know, competition's a good thing.
Yeah, well, as what for regarding, you know, the costs and so forth that are being charged?
Yeah, costs and everything, and just ease of administration. Look, I think, you know, if you're running a small business, I would lean on your accountant. I'll give your accountant a call and say, look, I need to get ready for this if you're not already, because the deadline's probably passed, to be honest. But give your accountant a call and lean on them a little bit and just say, look, I need your help. I'm trying to get ready for this. What do you suggest? How do I administer it? You know, give me your thoughts. Where am I going in the software? What am I doing? Your accountant is a wealth of knowledge on that type of stuff.
Yvonne, Irene from West Perth just rang to say she's really enjoying this discussion, which is great. Irene, obviously you haven't got any questions, but I've got a couple of questions. Since the government's put out the budget for this year and it's now enacted, obviously, from the 1st of July, I mean, what are some of the negatives that you're seeing from the recent budget and how it's affecting, you know, people's futures and their investments and also the superannuation?
Look, the budget has created uncertainty, and that is not a good thing for business. And the reason I say that is it's created uncertainty about when these laws will be introduced and how certain businesses may need to restructure their affairs.
And this has been complicated also by the very fact that we've had all these issues with the, you know, the Strait of Hormuz, the petrol crisis, the increased cost, the cost of living escalating, the other interest rate rise from the RBA just prior to the financial year, I think it was, wasn't it? Prior.
What I've really seen, Jamie, is just a loss of confidence.
Yeah.
And animal spirits or confidence is a big thing in an economy. An entrepreneurial spirit, you know, going out and having a go. And being confident, risking your dollar.
Yeah.
So I feel like the budget has really hit that, and it's because a lot of business owners, especially small business, they operate out of family trusts or other structures, and they're looking at it and thinking, well, I'm going to have to restructure down the line. I'm going to pay more tax. I can't do this. I can't do that. They're looking at it and saying, well, I'm working my backside off,
and they don't see me getting anywhere.
And someone's always got their hand out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, if there seems to be this cloud over society at the moment, worried about the fact that we are literally being taxed to the hilt on in every aspect of our life, a social life, a working life, and even when it comes to your investments and so forth, everything seems to be taxed.
Yeah, look, we've got very high sin taxes on alcohol and tobacco. We've got very high taxes on income. Our marginal tax rates are some of the highest in the world. In fact, the government takes home, I should say, over 50% of their tax revenue on marginal income tax, which is a hell of a lot, especially when you compare it to other Western nations. I just look at it today and I think it doesn't sort of matter which way you turn, there's a tax around the corner. And I just feel like that's disheartening for someone who's having a go.
Yeah, so do I. And I have to say that I think that, you know, what we're talking about now, I mean, this disincentive and dare I say it, that it's creating a lot of scrutiny towards the government about their effectiveness of how they're using our money. And then now people are questioning it, especially this, like, Dave Hughes campaign, which is obviously directed almost solely towards the state of play in Victoria at the moment. But seriously, he is also, you know, broadening his brush of complaint towards, you know, the rest of Australia as well.
Yeah, I have noticed that. I did listen to him on Mark Boris's podcast, actually, on YouTube.
And
he was an angry man, I can tell you that.
No, he's got an edge about him.
Yeah, and he, I believe he said he was a lifelong Labor voter, so he's really turned on the Labor Party. And I think maybe that's just symptomatic of what a lot of people are feeling. Like, we've got a lot of government debt. We don't feel like the government is, and both sides, not just Labor, every side, we don't feel like the government is making good use of the tax dollars we do give them. And now they want more. Now, if they were making brilliant use of it, there'd probably be less of an argument.
Yeah, but with all the in the budget, there was a lot of projected spending regarding, for example, defence, more so than we've ever experienced before, and probably much higher in our GDP than we've expected before. So, I mean, so even if they're asking for more money, they're still creating more debt at the same time as when they're asking for more money to pay for the debt that's already incurred.
Yep. Yeah, look, it's a difficult situation we find ourselves in. And look, I'm sure a lot of young people out there are finding it very hard to get ahead, very hard to save for a home deposit, very hard to get ahead, maybe working multiple jobs. And look, I feel for them.
Yeah, so do I. Are you seeing a downturn in business at the moment regarding people's trying to create a superannuation plan that is going to benefit from them? Or has that sort of gone into sort of part cardiac arrest because of all these issues of the heavy taxation and the unsurety in the market at the moment?
Oh, look, if anything, the budget changes have made superannuation for individuals more attractive, because it's one of the last, I guess, sort of tax havens available.
But I'm sure, I thought their income would be used more readily towards, you know, just paying day-to-day bills, so to speak. Obviously not.
Mm. I haven't seen too much impact yet on business, but the general mood is one of, why do I bother? If that makes sense, Jamie, they go, why do I work so hard? Why do I bother? In this type of environment.
Are the banks supporting people out there at the moment that want to get into business, or are they finding it tough through the banks at the moment as well?
No, look, the banks, the tap is on in terms of the banks. If you've got good credit and you can show cash
flow.
Good history, you know, your 5 C's, your character, your credit history, all that sort of stuff. The banks are actually, you know, there's no shortage of credit. They're willing to lend. If they see that the risk is a good risk for them, they're quite happy to give you money.
Well, that's good to hear. And what other things are you sort of seeing in the economy at the moment that might be of concern or might be worth discussing?
Oh, look, the main thing is that as of the weekend, the war in the Middle East seems to have restarted in earnest. So just hoping that doesn't hang around for too long.
Well, we've already seen the petrol rise literally 20 cents overnight.
Yeah, we were able to absorb it for the few months, the 3 or 4 months that it was being fought. And I think that was primarily because...
Of the excise cut.
Well, the excise cut locally and also other countries, you know, we don't have a strategic petroleum reserve, Jamie, but other countries do.
Well, apparently we should have had, because apparently we should have had up to, I think it was 90 days worth of fuel in store, and we only ever had 34 at the peak and 32 at the time of when the first closure of the Strait of Hormuz occurred.
Yeah.
So the thing is that we've never had our premium, whereas US and the UK have 100 day's worth of fuel in store at all times.
And even more, the US maintains a strategic petroleum reserve for military purposes.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, and China has massive storage and reserves. Mm. And actually, they cut their imports and used some of their reserves, and that helped the world out. And, you know, Japan was eating into their reserves, and so were a lot of other countries. But you wouldn't want this war to extend, you know, for months and months now, when countries have already sort of eaten into their reserves. It could impact the price, you know, more negatively than it did the first time around. And, you know, oil flows into everything.
Let's have a short break, and we've got a couple of questions to ask you just after this short break. We're joined by Jovan Svetoski from Financial Planning and Knight, Financial Planner with Knight Financial Services. Back soon. Curtain Radio. Time now is 19 minutes to 2. We're joined by Jovan Svetkovsky from Knight Financial Services. And we've got a question here from June from Scarborough. Rang to say she doesn't mind paying taxes as long as the multi-million dollar companies have to pay as well. Can you make comment on that, Jovan?
Yeah, look, everyone agrees with that comment, Jamie, I think. I don't think you'll find a person that disagrees. And look, our Australian companies do pay their tax. It's more the multinationals that find clever ways of reducing their tax burden here. Think Google, Facebook, those types of companies. And it's difficult for our politicians to hold them to account because, you know, the US is such a powerful country.
That's true. And it seems to be the case. If you've got more money, more power, you don't have to answer as many questions. We've got Cheryl from Mandra on line one. Cheryl, go ahead. Jovan's listening to you. Have you got a question for him? Hello? Oh, here we go. Sorry, Cheryl, can you hear us now? Sorry, I forgot to turn your microphone on. So what's your question again for Jovan?
Good afternoon. I'm calling on behalf of my brother, who has lived in a family home for 21 years but was not on the mortgage. So he's that's just been sold, and he will be a beneficiary of, you know, half the cost of that. He's now a pensioner in a rental. Would he be better off putting that into super, which he has none of, or into a fixed term?
Look, it depends on how big his risk appetite is. If he has no appetite for risk, fixed term's fine. And it would also, if he's not working and he's not generating any tax, then in his own name in a fixed term may be okay. But if he's doing some work or getting some taxable income, putting it in super may provide a better tax outcome. He needs advice, really.
Yeah, okay. He's 69, so he's not working. He's retired on an invalid pension. Yep.
Yep.
So get some advice sounds like a good idea.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Happy with that response, Cheryl?
Yes, yeah, that's. I think that's what I needed to do, but yeah. You've confirmed it, so thank you very much.
Well done. Thanks for calling through. Much appreciated. Coming up now is John from Midland. John, can you hear us? Are you there?
Yes, I can. Good
awesome.
Afternoon.
Okay, go ahead, mate. Your van's listening.
Yeah, I've got a tricky one. Look, I've got an old fella I look after, not that I'm much younger myself, but he's on his own, and he's a bit worried now. We're going to shift. And he has actually asked the question, can he come with us because we're going down south?
Mm-hmm. Geez, you must look after him well, John, to get that reaction.
Well, he wants to live with us. He feels secure and happy with me.
That's fantastic. Well done.
And he doesn't have anyone, but he said, look, I'm offering to put some money into it, you know, a fair sum. But how would that work legally? I mean, let's just say he put $250,000 towards a house because the house has to be special. It must be dual living zone because we want our privacy and he wants his.
Yeah, so look, the way to deal with this, John, is he's putting some money in for a home that you're going to ultimately benefit from. And it can be difficult to all of a sudden have three people on the title deed.
He won't be on the title deed.
There you go. So the way to solve that is to go chat to a lawyer and to satisfy himself, the old fella you look after could have the lawyer draft something called a life interest for him. And it's a document that you sign and he signs and all the parties sign. And that gives him the right to live in that home until he is wheeled out on a gurney, for want of a better phrase.
We didn't go there. But is there any legalities in him just pulling money out of his bank and giving it to us?
No, not at all. He can gift you the money, no problem at all. Well, there's no tax to pay.
We're talking 200,000 plus, he said, you know.
Yeah, look,
we don't need a big house, what I'm saying, you know, because it's only me and my wife. We don't need it, but we do want our privacy.
Yep.
And, you know.
No, fully understand. Look, he can give you the money with no strings attached. If he wants to protect himself, he could say it's a loan and you could draft a loan agreement and he just never calls that loan in if he's happy. But that might not suit you. In this case, I think the life interest is probably the way to go. But I would seek legal advice.
Okay, not a problem. Thank you for your help.
Thanks, John, for calling through. Next up online is Phil from Karama. Phil, go ahead. Jovan's listening.
G'day, Phil.
Good afternoon. How are you going?
Good. Very well, thank you.
Good. I'm just wondering, me and my wife are looking at selling our property and building a granny flat on my son's property. Obviously, we're going to come out with a bit of money from the sale, and I'm just wondering what would be the best way, you know, to invest it, or, you know, so we're not all taken in taxes. Unfortunately, but we're both on disability pensions at the moment because I had to retire early a couple of years ago because of cancer.
I'm sorry to hear that.
That's fine. I'm in remission now, thank God. Thanks to Charlie Gardner's. But it's obviously ongoing. So I just wonder what the, you know, when we get the nest egg, once we do the sale and everything, with the surplus money.
Yeah, look, if you're under 75, you and your wife can both contribute up to $390,000 after-tax money into a super fund.
Oh, right. Is that each, yeah?
Each, yep. Yeah. It's called an after-tax contribution, or non-concessional is the term the ATO likes to use. And if you're over 60 and not working, you've got full access to that money. You can start a private pension. All of the income and capital gains tax it earns will be tax-free. I would think super's a good spot.
Go for super, yeah.
Yeah, look, get advice, but generally speaking, it's good.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. I just don't want them, you know, obviously we've worked hard all our lives for the house. We've got no mortgage now, and I just don't want them to chew it up, you know, because like you were saying earlier about going away on holidays and that before we leave the land.
Yeah, no, look, super can be a good solution, but I'm speaking from general terms here. You should get some advice. But it sounds like in your situation, you're retired, you're over 60, you're about to get a lump sum of money. Yeah. It has great tax outcomes in super, 0% tax, and you've got full access, and a diversified portfolio that is within something that you're comfortable with is probably going to beat bank interest over the long term quite handily.
Right, yeah, because I say we've got no other savings at all or anything like that, you know, or super. You know, so that's where, you know, we don't want to lose what we get, basically.
Yeah, I'd maybe leave 12 to 18 months living expenses outside in cash, and then anything else you could maybe look at investing according to the risk appetite you want to take.
That's lovely. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Great advice. Happy with that, Phil?
Yeah, just one more question. How, going back to the disability pension that we're both on, how would that affect that? I mean, is that why I need to, obviously, to move the money so we don't lose that?
It can offset your disability pension. So Centrelink will apprise you of that and how that will work. And if it does offset it, that's why it's even more important to potentially get that money to work so you can earn the difference with your own capital.
Yeah, get it back, as you say, All right.
Thanks, Phil. I'm glad to hear from you, mate. And best of luck with your cancer. I really hope you recover well and stay in remission.
Yeah, well, like I say, thanks to Charlie Gardner, they're fantastic down there. So looked after us.
They've looked after me as well, and they do a wonderful job. There's no doubt about it.
They ever. You just can't praise them enough.
That's enough.
Good people.
Exactly. Yvonne, I've got a message here from Graham from Southlake, who rang to say another deterrent to downsizing is the new area that you move into. It might be unsafe, which is now becoming commonplace as well, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it can be daunting. You know, you move to an area you don't like, you don't know, that you can't walk the streets in. It's an impediment.
It certainly is. Listen, we're going to take a short break and come back with Paul from Canning Vale. Back in just a second with Jovan Svetkoski from Knight Financial Services. Curtain Radio. Time now is 2:09. You're listening to the Tuesday edition of the afternoon show. We're joined by Jovan Svetkoski from Knight Financial Services, and we've got Paul from Canning Vale online right now. Paul, go ahead. Jovan is listening.
There you go, Paul. I live in Canning Vale, and my property's worth over 1.5, and I need to downsize, and I'm retired. What's my best option?
Yeah, look, if you need to downsize, I mean, the best option is to find a place you like for as cheap as you can find, and that way you're going to release more of your own money. Look, in simple terms, if you could find a place all in for $1 million, you're going to pocket $500,000 tax-free, and then you've got the ability to put, you know, most of that or all of that into super.
Yeah, I haven't got super, but if you put it in the bank, I'll lose my pension, wouldn't I?
Are you a single person or member of a couple?
Single.
Yeah, it depends on what other assets you've got, because if it's $500,000 and a motor vehicle and a bit of change in the bank, you will still get a part-age pension, because the cutout is close to $700,000 for a single person now.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thank you. That helps you a lot. Thank you for that.
Well, all the best, mate, and thank you for calling through and having a chat to Jovan. Jovan, thanks as always, mate. It's great to have you in here. Next week you'll be back again on Tuesday with Jenny, because Jenny will be back in the chair again. But
absolutely.
Can't thank you enough. And I should mention before we finish up, I must point out that the advice suggested by Jovan is general in nature, and it is advisable to seek professional advice. Thanks again, and you'll be seeing Jenny next week.
Thanks, Jamie.